okay if we walk with you?
It's a free country.
I'm kneeling about with Paul Morrison. He is the writer-director of 23 Walks. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Stroud in England, and I've just become a grandfather, so I'm very excited.
Oh, congratulations.
First time. Thank you.
First time.
Yeah. And where are you? You look like you're in the fields of Hertfordshire, but I don't think you are.
I wish, but I've got very dear friends that live in Hertfordshire that I miss so much. So it feels like I'm there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it certainly looks like it.
So wait, I want to hear a little bit more about becoming a grandpa. How do you feel about all this?
Well, very excited. I've waited a long time. I'm a little apprehensive because I'm elderly to be having a grandchild for the first time. But I seem to have a lot of energy, so I'll do my job as best I can, whatever it is.
Ah, oh, wonderful. Do you know what mazel tov means?
I sure do. It's the right day to be saying it.
Yes, lots to celebrate. So this film I found to be so wonderful, not only because I am such a huge dog lover, but also because it attracts somebody like of my age group. You know what I mean? It just speaks to my generation so much.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah. I wanted to make a film about my generation. So, but a film that wasn't kind of patronizing about people of a mature age or however you want to call us. Lots of films about older people are kind of twee, and I wanted this to feel real and to be and to encounter real these two would-be lovers to encounter real life problems, you know, and difficulties in building their relationship.
So tell me, obviously you were inspired to write this. So what was that inspiration?
Well, it was partly my dog dying. And wanting to have a way of remembering him. And it was also because I wanted to do this, tell a story about my generation and sort of say that, you know, love and passion and desire don't end, you know, when you're over a certain age. We still have strong feelings and we want to live them.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your dog.
Benji, golden retriever. Very, very placid, very gentle, wonderful family dog. A big dog as well, so you can kind of wrestle with him. He's very much the character, had very much the character of Tilly in the movie. And so in the movie, I wanted kind of one big friendly dog. Even though the breed is a little scary, people tend to be frightened of German Shepherds. That was important in terms of the film, that she had to overcome something in order to get close to Dave's dog. But also, you know, really sweet and gentle at the same time.
Yeah,
and also a dog that had been through hard times. And come out the other side.
So Paul, tell me about casting your canine stars, and I'm calling them stars because to me they were the stars of this movie. I want that German Shepherd desperately. I am not afraid of German Shepherds. She was gorgeous.
Yeah, she was lovely, wasn't she? Yeah. You know, as a director, you have to be careful, but, you know, directors are meant to fall in love with their leading ladies. or male directors, and guess it works the other way around, because you want to sort of glamorize them and glorify them a bit. And I had two leading ladies in this film, and I certainly fell in love with both of them. I got to I got to know and like the little dog as well, Henry. And it was, he is a great counterbalance to, you know, because little dogs tend to bark more because, you know, they're that's what they have as weaponry, you know, kind of. So we had a, I cast this barky little dog. Now, the only problem about casting dogs is that the dogs don't have the same attitude to filming as you do, you know. You were on a pretty tight budget and a tight schedule. And, you know, they, every member of the crew is concentrating on getting the shot. And dogs don't are particularly interested in getting the shot. They're interested in food and running around and playing and sniffing, mostly sniffing. So you have to employ a lot of patience and a lot of good, I wouldn't say tricks, but you know, you really need your dog handlers to encourage the dogs to do what you want to do, and that took a while. And particularly because Dave, our lead actor, wasn't a dog person. In fact, Alison was, and she knew how to be around dogs, but he didn't, and he had to learn, you know. Maybe that was as, you know, much as learning his script, you have to learn how to be around a dog, you know. And we got there. He got there.
So is there like a dog casting agency in England that you work with? Or tell me how you went
about it. There are recognized dog handlers who work with dogs for film, or work with all kinds of animals for film. And we got a few of those to show their wares and put them through some auditions. Anyway, the dog who played Tilly did great. Yeah, she did good.
So
she was a little young for the part. I cast young, but, you know, she was able to age up.
So how did you know that they would get along with each other and wouldn't kill each other? Was there sort of like a chemistry test with the dogs?
They knew one another. They came from the same stables, as it were. So the more the problem was the other way around, how to get them not to be too familiar with each other. But we managed, yeah.
So tell me then, give me specifically how Dave Johns, knowing that he did not like dogs, how he had to come around to Tilly.
Partly it took time, but he just had to get used to being around the dog. But the main weapon that he had was a tennis ball. He had Tilly's tennis ball in his pocket. And as long as he had Tilly's tennis ball in his pocket, he had Tilly's rapt attention and goodwill, you know, and Tilly would follow him around. So that was a smelly tennis ball was the main weapon, and it worked. Yeah.
And how about Alison and Dave? Did they have immediate chemistry, because they are just so gorgeous together in this movie?
They are great together. And I didn't know that they had immediate chemistry, but they're both very, very good actors, you know. And actually, from the first moment, no, it wasn't the first. I wanted to be there the first time they met, because I cast them separately. They didn't know one another. Well, they hadn't worked together before. They obviously knew of one another. And but they met secretly without me, because they wanted to make sure that they got on without my influencing matters. But the first time they met with me, you could already sense the tensions, that there were correct tensions, but, you know, that she was a bit pushing him away and he was a bit kind of wanting to please. And you know, when you get that dynamic already in the relationship, you kind of know that it's going to, it helps you reassure you that it's going to work on film. And they're both, you know, they're both very funny as well as being good actors. And, you know, off camera, they had the whole set kind of in hysterics many times. I wish we had been able to shoot the making of, because there would have been a lot of laughs in that. And there are some laughs in the movie, but there's also some depth in the movie, which was important to me.
Yeah. So what did they sort of do offset to make everybody laugh and put everyone at ease when, you know, during those heavier times?
They would, you know, adopt different characters and you know, play off against one another in you know, he would play posh and she would play not posh or whatever the opposite, poor or whatever. They were both very good at extemporizing, and I couldn't possibly hope to capture that myself because I'm not.
What else about your personal life, shall we say, made it into the film since you did write this, other than the fact that it was for your dog?
You know, there were many things, you know, that life is not straightforward. I kind of know that from my own experience, you know, and that you can think you're doing fine and then some or other bomb hits, you know, one kind or another. And that's happened to me. I'm sure that's happened to you. And that's a part of the movie. And how you deal with that, how you manage that, how it messes up the rest of your life, or how you manage to stop it messing up the rest of your life, is certainly one of the themes of the film. And I hope that's kind of rewarding for people to see that actually you can get through the tough stuff.
Yeah.
And find something loving on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, your background is in making documentaries, of course. So what do you find are the main differences? Because with documentaries, you sort of don't really know where you're going until you get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I wanted more control. I wanted to tell the story, that my story, rather than looking for stories in from other people, kind of thing. And I love making documentaries. I had a great time with it. But I reached a point where I want to tell the stories that I want to tell. And that's something else. And it was a new challenge to make feature films. And you know, I had the good fortune or the misfortune on my first feature film to be nominated for an Oscar. You know, and there's only one way you can go after that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they're sort of trying to make films with heart that also have meaning. I think that's what I've carried on trying to do. And that's true in the documentaries, and it's true in the feature films as well, fiction films.
So what do you remember, Paul, about that Oscar nomination? When you, was it sort of like, how would you describe how you felt?
Well, terribly excited, very high, and very proud, you know, that because I've been tried by a jury of my peers, and you know, they have selected my film, I mean, it would be lovely to have won, but it, you know, it was great to be nominated. And there, you know, it was a foreign language film, and there's a lot of respect, a surprising amount of respect in a way, paid by the Hollywood community to foreign language movies. And there's a lot of people who are very, very knowledgeable and have watched many foreign language movies before they select, before they nominate. So I felt very honored and excited. And Oman, they gave me a tux and they dressed my wife. And it was fun, all that bit of it. The glamour. Well, as long as you don't take it too seriously, it was a lot of fun.
So did they fly you in to Hollywood?
They flew us in. Yeah, they flew us in, you know.
Wow.
And I got to sit next to Catherine Deneuve and I showed her the way to the toilet.
That beats getting nominated, showing Catherine Deneuve the toilet.
Exactly.
That's great. And I love that you worked with Robert Pattinson, who I absolutely adore, in the film Little Ashes. I'm trying to see it again and watch it because it was such a good film about Salvador Dali.
Yeah, well, I think you can find it, you know, you can stream it still on, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention names. In England, we worry about the BBC and, you know, that we can't mention brand names. Anyway, you'll find it on Amazon. I think so. it still goes around.
Why do you think that film is still resonates with people so much? Is it because of Robert or the topic or what?
Well, partly because of Robert, and that Robert kind of bravely, you know, went into a gay love story, you know, at a time when gay love stories weren't really being made. I don't know, it was such a, that period of Spanish history was so evocative and exciting and in some way, and, you know, desperately sad. And still very alive, you know, it's all those issues are very alive in Spain. So Spanish speaking peoples still feel very close to it.
Mm. And what are some of your best memories working with Robert Pattinson on that film? Was he as difficult as people say?
Well, he was tricky. because he didn't really, you know, we had a week's rehearsal, or a couple of weeks, 10 days rehearsal, and he didn't really want to give me the performance in the rehearsal. He held back in rehearsal, and he assured me, don't worry, it's going to be okay on the day. But, you know, you do worry a bit, because at that time, you know, he was much more untested as an actor. And hadn't played a range of roles. But he worked incredibly hard at it. You know, we had apartments in the same apartment block, you know, so we could see one another's balconies. You know, he was there on his balcony hour after hour after hour, researching Salvador Dali, watching footage of Salvador Dali, kind of learning. I told him, just to play it from himself and not necessary to play, to try and mimic, you know, Salvador Dali. But he wanted to be able to do both, and he worked incredibly hard. And I think he did achieve something really special, you know, kind of, you know, he painted a picture of a very difficult man, quite unpleasant man in some ways, quite twisted up man in a lot of ways, but nevertheless, your sort of heart went out to him and to the feelings he had for Lorca. So
yeah, I also feel because it was him, it was it the topic is more accessible to people of his age. And that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. We got a whole audience of teen fans, you know, who we might not have got if Rob hadn't been in the film. Yeah.
Yeah. So now getting back to 23 Walks, this is such a silly question, but why did you choose the number 23? Does it mean something to you?
No, I mean, I think, you know, somewhere around, you know, the 10th draft of the film, of the screenplay, that's what it came out to. You know, it came out to around 23. And then I decided to keep it at 23. So if I ever lost a scene, I kind of put another scene back or something, because it's a prime number. It's not 21 grams and all the rest of that. That wouldn't feel too good. It's 21. So 24 has been used very often. 22 is a cricket number. Won't mean anything to anybody outside the old Commonwealth. 23 felt like the right number.
It does. It really does.
And then there was the question whether we would number every time, every walk. And we decided to just number some of the walks, but enough to keep you on track with knowing how close we were to the end.
What were some of the actors' favorite walks? Did they have favorites?
Gosh. No, I think they loved being in the air. You know, it's all around my house where we shot, except for where we go into the scene behind you is, you know, 12 minutes away. It's a little further away, but mostly I could get out of bed, roll out of bed, kind of grab a cup of something, and I'd be on set. You know, wonderful not have to get in a cab or, you know, drive or, you know, to go miles in order to be on set. So I recommend it for filmmakers of my generation.
So this is literally your backyard where you shot.
Yeah, very much. They're all walks that I took my own dog on. So, you know, and I think the actors appreciated that, and they like being there. I mean, and they like being there because it's green and it's beautiful. And provided it's not too cold, which it was sometimes.
You can't avoid that. Rainy.
Rainy, cold, yeah. So there were some tough days out on the fields, and tough days kind of in the cold and the wet, waiting for the dog to do the thing that you wanted it to do, take after take after take.
Yeah, all you need is a couple of treats and they're good to go, right?
That's right, yeah. What did you like about the film?
Everything. Everything. I just, you know, there's so much, as my husband likes to say, really horrible types of distorted movies out there. And it's so refreshing to see something that is so lovely and romantic. You know, I just loved it. I picked up the phone right away and I said, I want to talk to Paul now. Yeah.
Great. Good. Thank you.
Yes. So will you get another dog?
Not right now. I've got a new grandchild. That's going to take up the energy, I think. So further down the line, maybe, when I have a more sedentary lifestyle again.
Do you have another project in the works?
Yeah. Trip that I took to the USSR when I was a student in 1964. So, there's a few in the works.
And who would play you in this film?
Somebody terribly young and good looking, who was a great guitar player. I don't know. We haven't cast it yet.
You know, I think Michael Fassbender resembles you a little bit. What do you think?
He does, but he's certainly not young enough to play this role. I was 19 then, I think. So someone 20, 21, 22, maybe. Yeah. Somebody fresh-faced and innocent before they've had the movie business has knocked them for six.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to see this. Does it have a working title?
The Leningrad Gig.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, because we had our guitars with us. You know, we drove to Russia. We had our guitars with us. And we were invited to play at a socialist youth congress, you know, international socialist. You know, somebody said, come along, you know, will you play for us? You know, we knew two songs, you know, one Lennon and McCartney and one other song. And it turned out to be a football stadium. So we played. So that's the Leningrad Gig. And that's the sort of, so it's a kind of rock and roll return. And it's also a Jewish side, a Jewish return to Russia side, return to Odessa, in my case. So it's kind of got lots of shades to it.
Wow. Can you come back on my show and talk about it? I would love to hear more about it. Sounds great.
Yeah, sure. Well, fingers crossed I get to make it.
We'll put the word out.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your grandbaby. Thank you.
It's been nice talking to you.
Same here.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's go for a walk.
Where's your favorite place in the world?
I haven't found it yet.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.